Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping you build an incredible business and equally amazing life. And today on the show, got to give a thanks to Alan Walton, who introduced me to today's guest, Jonathan Solorzano. He's the owner of Solo Media Group, which is a Shopify dev agency. And he's someone who just has a lot of deep experience in e-com and Shopify. He ran Kanye West's website, Yeezy, for a long time before it got shut down. Obviously, Kanye said some pretty rotten things, which don't endorse. But the e-commerce experience that Jonathan was able to get through part of that period before things kind of went south was pretty wild, and had some interesting lessons from that, from wildly high volume e-commerce sales. So talk about that. We also talk about what I found even more interesting was how he's built out a team in Latin America, his favorite country for hiring, why US-based manufacturing is actually more approachable and maybe more valuable than you'd think, and not as expensive. And we talk about hiring too, why hiring through your network is a pretty huge advantage. Anyway, great discussion. Really enjoyed chatting with him. I hope you enjoy it too, right after this. It is incredibly hard to trust reviews these days. Every restaurant on Yelp is 4.6 out of 5 stars. You get on Twitter and you find out the people promoting and advocating for certain apps end up, you know, actually are investors, and they just don't disclose it. It's really hard to know what's real and what's spun. And that's why E-commerce Fuel is so unique and valuable. It's a group of 1,200 vetted 7- and 8-figure owners with zero agenda apart from your success and connecting with one another. No one's pitching you. There's no thinly veiled affiliate links, just operators sharing their unfiltered opinions. Just this morning in our forums, there's a couple of threads that popped up, one about a popular landing page service with half a dozen members warning people to steer clear. Another member recommending a service, a shipping auditing service that saved them over $200,000 last year. And we take all these reviews over the decade we've been in existence, and we compile them into a review directory that has over 20,000 SaaS and agency reviews. So if you want to cut through the spin and the hype and learn from other store owners with zero agenda, check us out. You can learn more and apply at ecommercefuel.com. Attention Shopify sellers, say goodbye to annoying design limitations and outdated user interfaces. Now you can customize every inch of your website with the brand new landing page builder inside the Zipify Pages app. Zipify Pages just released their biggest upgrade ever, so now you can drag, drop, or swap any element on practically any page to make your store look and perform exactly the way you want it to. Zipify Pages was created by my friend Ezra Firestone, founder of a $175 million Shopify store, and it's packed with over 70 marketing templates you can use to generate leads, run promos, and scale any brand. And because the templates come from Ezra's own 8- and 9-figure brands, you know they actually work. You can try Zipify Pages and their brand new builder for free for 14 days at zipifypages.com. That's Z-I-P-I-F-Y pages.com. So Jonathan, we got to start. I have a lot of places we could start, but I think one of the most fitting is you had a day where the company you were running, you're the CTO for, $19 million in a single day. I don't think almost anyone, if anyone listening, can comprehend that. What is that like? Put us in the shoes of, like, you know, what breaks? What's the emotions? What's going well? What dumpster fires are you having to ignore? Take us into a day like that.
I mean, there's a lot leading up to that day, but I can tell you what it looks like looking at the back end of the Shopify, and the back end doesn't load, and the data that you're supposed to be reporting or trying to understand just doesn't catch up because it's just going so fast. So it's like this really exciting thing of like, holy, like, I cannot believe this is happening. It's also kind of stressful because then I'm worried about the front end not falling or breaking apart. And I mean, you know, I bet my career on Shopify. So I'm happy to say that Shopify held up during that moment. And it wasn't like they didn't have knowledge beforehand about it. So that means that they just held up because they, you know, they're just a good company. So it's pretty interesting.
I mean, from an emotional rush, I've had moments in my career where like I've got, you know, maybe 500, 600, 700 people on a website, and you're just sitting there, you're watching the analytics, or you have a great sales day. Were you just sitting there? Were you just on a high the whole day, and the whole team is just kind of like, you're just 11 out of 10 mental energy as stuff is just exploding? Like, what's the psychological aspect of that like?
Yeah, I think that for the rest of the team, it probably felt like a really high, but I had spent the whole night and the whole week prior preparing. So when that happened and I saw it starting to take off and I saw that everything was kind of held up, I was like, okay, I'm going to take a break now. I wish I could tell you that I was I was just so exhausted. It was probably like a week of not sleeping. So I felt good because I had set up the foundation for everything. Like I had set up server side tracking so that I knew that once, like I knew this data was going to be really good for the people that were doing the paid media. I had set up everything so good that I felt like, okay, this is perfect. Now I can rest. And I'm going to look really good tomorrow with all the work that's been done.
What did you really learn from that experience? You said you learned 10 years of e-commerce experience in like, you know, less than 12 months. What did you really take away from the whole experience in terms of lessons, business lessons?
Yeah. So, I think, you know, when you ask me about his brand and how do you have a $19 million day, it's because his brand has been associated with high fashion and this scarcity for so long that when his product, when it was put out, it was, you know, he had a new sneaker that was $200. It was a sock shoe. And a lot of his clothing is high quality and regarded as high quality. And it was selling for around $80 to $100 a t-shirt. The day of the Super Bowl was the day that they lowered the price to everything for $20. And that lowering of the price, because he's been associated with high fashion and all that for so long, was what drove it. People thought it was a mistake. People thought it was limited. People couldn't believe it. It just drove so much attention to the brand. And so like when I look at what I learned, I mean, it really depends on what route you want to take. If you want to go down the technical route, we can walk through that, or you want to go down the brand route, which route do you feel most excited to hear about?
I think both are fascinating. I'd love to hear kind of maybe top takeaway or two from both of those.
The interesting thing that one of the coolest things that I learned from working with Ye is he likes to make it's not always about money for him. It's about making almost like a splash. Like he knew that lowering the price to $20 would make a splash, and that would be enough to you know, he's not motivated by money. He's motivated by change. He's motivated by publicity. He's motivated by different things. And it was interesting to see because, you know, we, especially us that work in the e-commerce world, you're thinking about profit margins. You're thinking about, you know, how much am I spending on my ads? And all of that fell into place after that day. After that day, now you can negotiate with vendors. Now you can negotiate with volume. Now you can negotiate, like everything made sense after the fact, but it was, you know, before the fact, it sounded absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah. And what have you learned about manufacturing in the US versus overseas? I mean, obviously pros, cons, cost, convenience. Is it something like, yeah, thoughts on the two, having been deep in the belly of the beast there in LA and the garment manufacturing scene?
You know, I can talk about my experience with manufacturing overseas, where you get samples, you try different things, and then you get them, and then you order an MOQ. Like it's a little bit of a lag time into getting these things and testing different things. And what I noticed with the US is just like, you can test things a lot faster. You can get things done a lot faster. If you're in LA in the factory, like they was just trying different samples at all times. And then what was really interesting is LA has such a huge population that hiring was, while it was hard, there was the population there to get it done. You know, you speak the language, you speak English, you kind of like, you know, before this experience, I was always like overseas and cheaper. Now I'm leaning more towards, man, there's a lot of benefits. And, you know, for a couple of bucks, the benefits of working in the US, they might outweigh you know, the quicker, the getting to market quicker, trying different things. I kind of have been leaning more towards US manufacturer, if I'm being honest.
Interesting. You say a couple bucks, like let's say a t-shirt, for example, sell them for $70-$80 under the Easy brand. I would just guess, let's say if you're making a t-shirt and, you know, overseas somewhere, basic t-shirt, I'm guessing, or even a premium, let's say a premium t-shirt, I would imagine the cost savings would be, like, from a cost of goods sold perspective, would be, you know, 2 to 3x, you know, markup. Let's say your t-shirt costs $4 overseas, it'd be, you know, $15 to $20 here in the US. Is that not necessarily the case? Is it cheaper than people might expect?
I mean, yeah, I think it's actually cheaper than people expect. I think, you know, like, if you're saying four, I would probably say it's eight, you know what I mean? Maybe seven. I don't think it's 3x the cost, you know, like they, as an example, they, you know, we were making really high-end printed shirts for, you know, 10 bucks or something like that, right? Like, and if you look at this stuff, it's really high quality, 100% cotton, custom designs, you know, like multiple prints. It's, yeah. And another thing that I didn't mention is also the quality control, right? Like you have to wait to get stuff from Asia, get it here, then quality control. Like quality control is instant when you're in the States. So, I mean, is it, you know, when you say 4 to 8, it's half the price. Yeah. But I think that there are some benefits other than just cost.
Oh yeah. I mean, that seems significantly cheaper. There's a brand that unfortunately no longer is around. It was called Pistol Lake, one of my absolute all-time favorite. I still makes up probably half my wardrobe. And they were made in LA. And I always assumed like that they just, and they were expensive stuff, but I always thought about that. And I always assumed that just the markup for making it in the US would be 3-4x more. So it's cool to hear, super encouraging to hear that, you know, it's obviously going to be more money, but not necessarily exponentially more, maybe just, you know, 100%
more.
Well,
let me add, I mean, when you see that a product's made in the US, are you willing to pay the extra $10 than if it were to be made in China or Vietnam? You know, would you, I guess that, you know, maybe it's specific because maybe, you know, but I personally, sometimes I'm like, okay, I'd rather pay for it. Not because I'm America, but it's more like, okay, like, cool. It's made in the US. It's maybe a little, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it totally depends on the nuance. But for me, those shirts, like I loved, it was a part of why I purchased them. The main reason why, I feel like it is something that is on the dividing line for me. Like I'm not going to purchase an inferior product made in the US because it's domestic. But if there's a couple products and both of them are very similar and one is, I will pay a premium on the margin for a US made good. Partially because, yeah, I think it's, I like supporting America. I think it's also important, like it's important, I think, that America produces things. You know, I think it's important we have a manufacturing base. I don't think that's necessarily where our future is, but having some level of manufacturing capability, I think, is important, both from like a standpoint of economic viability going forward, but also for a labor base for people. Like, yeah, so I think it wouldn't be my sole purchasing decision, but if I'm looking at two brands, it definitely could, it would be a consideration for
sure. It could sway you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think about like, you know, what's interesting, and I wasn't in the apparel industry at all before, right? But like there is this niche for people that like Japanese made product in the US. There's a niche to that because it's a high quality. And what's interesting is because we're in the States and we don't know this, overseas, American made product is revered as high quality, as special. Like if you're in Japan and it's American made, like that's a big deal. They like the Levi's that are American made. They like, you know, when American Apparel was their biggest market in Japan. Like it's funny because we're here, but overseas people revere our product as high quality.
What about some of the technical things you learned in 12 months, especially from a web-based perspective in your kind of crash course there?
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is, you know, for a long time with Ye, he, you know, he had the contract with Adidas and it was always working through third parties. And this was his first attempt at owning, doing everything through his own, through himself. So, you know, warming up the huge email list, that was his own thing. And making sure that the data was rich, but like, you know, everything that you, that these direct to consumer podcasts and everything you hear, it was really cool to be validated with a brand like Yeezy, because all the proper pixel implementation, the proper email setup, like everything set up properly, when it started humming, it would all generate so much revenue. Like the email was such a huge revenue driver. The having the proper pixel implementation was, we had a really nice funnel for Facebook, TikTok. Like the ad guys were making incredible ROAS on what they were spending. Like setting up everything, like, yeah, I don't know if that answers your question, but it was really cool to see just the proper pixel implementation, the proper email setup, the proper, okay, the welcome sequence, okay, the abandoned cart, like all the things that are very basic. And it, like, if you do it well, it scaled so well. So like the whole implementation was very basic to anyone that has an e-commerce store, but we just had to do it within a month and we had to make sure it worked, because when it started humming, it can't break.
When you said proper, a bunch of things, but proper email kind of funnel, and then also the pixel implementation. Can you talk about those just a little bit? Like what... And maybe it's just a very basic, you know, kind of lead capture and then nurture series and then you sell. But whatever it is, what did that funnel look like on the email side? And then same thing for pixel implementation. How were you setting it up in a way that other people might not be thinking through properly?
With Shopify, we use something, we use a company called, and this is not a plug, well, you can, there's a bunch of other ones like Elevar, but we use a company called Little Data that set up server-side tracking for Yeezy. And what it did is it made sure that, you know, if somebody added to cart, if somebody, whatever the case is, for every event was properly tracked, you know, with rich data. What I noticed because I run an agency, we have so many e-commerce clients. Generally, when they come to me, what ends up happening is too many marketing agencies have come and gone, and their pixels are set up improperly. They're maybe double counting conversions. They're using an old implementation that what used to be how it was set up on Shopify or whatever the case is. So like, it sounds basic, but I'd say like 70% of the stores that come across my table in my agency have that issue.
Interesting.
And then when it comes to the email, I mean, the very basics, like, I mean, we didn't even have a pop-up because that just doesn't fit in with EA's design, but it was just like, after somebody got accepted, we sent an email that saying, you know, after somebody purchased, we sent an email that saying, hey, welcome to Yeezy, you know, whatever. And that email generated a ton of money. And then the abandoned cart emails, like the very basic stuff. It was the abandoned cart welcome, and then just the regular email campaigns that just, you know, new product launches or whatever.
Hey, Andrew here with a quick sidebar. I want to introduce you to Brett, who's the owner of microfiberwholesale.com. He's been a part of e-commerce fuel since the very beginning, one of the OGs, and a really cool guy. Has an avocado farm, travels in a van with his family, and just great guy. And here's what he has to say about his experience with e-commerce fuel, our private vetted community for 7- and 8-figure owners.
I've been a member of ECF since 2014. And in that time, I think we crossed the 7-figure mark in revenue, and I've also crossed the 8-figure mark. And ECF is a huge part of that growth, because I've been able to access a network of business owners and create friendships and go really deep. But really, what ECF has provided for me is the ability to have somebody that's been through whatever I'm struggling with, or I can bounce an idea off of or get new ideas from. There's always somebody that I can turn to that's been there and done that, that can help walk me through whatever issue we're dealing with or idea we have for growth. And that's really where the value comes. It's just building, for me, it's been building my business network, just having people that I can reach out to with any issue that I've got going on in my business or personally. It's been pretty amazing for that. And I always tell people the most valuable thing that I have as a business owner is my network. And most of that has come from e-commerce fuel.
After hearing literally hundreds of comments like this over the last decade our community's been around, it's easy to offer our 10x guarantee. If you don't get at least a 10x ROI on your membership in the first year, in terms of increased revenue, saved time, and saved money, we'll give you a full refund plus an extra $1,000. But many of our members report seeing massive value in just the first month or two when applying it to their 7- or 8-figure business. You can learn more about the community and apply for membership at ecommercefuel.com. Okay, back to the show.
I mentioned earlier, so I'm going to pivot a little bit here and talk about your team on the Shopify side. Was looking at their bios and their backgrounds, and you have built a really deep, dynamic, talented team in Latin America. I saw Mexico, I saw Brazil, I saw Venezuela, all over the place. And I'm just curious here how long you've been doing that and what you've learned from building, you know, a very technical team in South and Central America.
Yeah, I've been doing it now. It's going to be 7 years. I think, you know, what's interesting about building, if we look at, talk about technical teams in South America, is there's a lot of resources in Spanish for learning how to code. But what there isn't a lot of resources for is how to, for example, we focused so much on Shopify. It's hard to find a Shopify development course in Spanish, right? So what we found is like we had to, what we built is almost like our own internal training where we're taking young people maybe from college or looking for, they've taken, you know, they graduated with computer science and we're saying, hey, like we have the process on how to build within Shopify. Here's this whole different world of building inside of Shopify with Shopify's API, with Shopify's structure. And we train them that way. And that's why what I feel lucky for is that we get these people early and we're able to train them because I've had people that have been with me for those 7 years that they transitioned from Magento to WordPress to Shopify. So I think, you know, it was really the training that was built through experience that is why we've been able to build a successful successful tech team in Latin America. And it also helps that they're all culturally similar, right? Like I think that it helps that they kind of see each other, they know the backgrounds that they're from, and yeah, it's pretty cool.
Do you have a favorite country in Latin America for technical talent specifically? I mean, obviously different countries. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when I first started, I've hired in Uruguay, I've hired in Mexico, I've hired in Brazil. We landed on Venezuela, and it was mostly by luck. My first hire, he was in Colombia, but he was from Venezuela, and then he hired his cousin, and we hired their cousin. And the interesting thing about why Venezuela worked for us is first that everyone is Venezuelan, and then second, they are digital nomads by force. A lot of them are leaving their country; they have no steady income. And there's, you know, there was that desire to like, I want to go to a different country that I can have a good life, but I need to figure out how to do it. So there was a really big desire to learn this technical, specifically Shopify too, because they're like, okay, well, if this is my opportunity, let me capitalize on it. What I found with, you know, the other countries like Uruguay and Brazil and Mexico is they were trained in one specific language and they wanted to stay in that language, or they also wanted this career. They want, you know, for example, Mexico is very career oriented. Uruguay and Costa Rica was very career oriented. And our company is a small business, right? We're not, you know, it's like, it's remote. It doesn't have that career where, okay, you can, you know, you're a manager two, manager three. And I found that was hard for a lot of the people we hired from Costa Rica or Uruguay or Mexico.
No, that makes a lot of sense. How are you reaching out and connecting with them? Are you just using like traditional job boards, LinkedIn, Latin America focused hiring portals, or how are you sourcing candidates?
Yeah, I mean, in the very beginning, we were using Facebook groups. We were using like, you know, WordPress developers in Venezuela, and they would have a small like group of people there. And that was a good source at the beginning. And then once we had enough internal team members, they always, you know, everyone has a friend or a family member that they want to, you know, connect. So now we do mostly internal referrals, but at the very beginning we were looking on Facebook groups. And then usually, I mean, you could ask the same, you can ask their team members. If you have one, there might be a part of a Telegram. They have their own groups that they all hang out at, similar to how we have our groups that we hang out in.
Yeah. I, for the longest time, was very reluctant to hire people from kind of my extended personal network or word of mouth. Like I would think about it, and I wouldn't rule them out, but I didn't weigh it too heavily. And more recently, I've come back around, and this is through the guidance of some folks and some personal experience, to really thinking much more seriously about looking at your extended network personally, and also weighing word of mouth from people you trust really heavily. Because one thing you can't get through a quick interview process, even if you can get aptitude for skills or at least a little proxy for it, you can't get a sense of character, of how they're going to perform in something for a long time, of of work ethic, those things that take 2, 3, 4 months sometimes to figure out. And if you get them wrong, they're just catastrophic, right? But you can, that's the only way you can really check and vet those is through some kind of network effect. And those are arguably, you know, the most important part of the job. So I've changed my tune around that, you know, hiring using that philosophy a lot the last, you know, last year.
I love that. And I wonder, I mean, have you noticed that for me, sometimes I feel like it almost feels like the person that referred them in our organization is vested in their success. So they already automatically have a person that's like their, you know, when I was working a corporate job, my mentor or my buddy, you know, that walked you through the for the first couple of months. And I think that's been helpful in our organization where it's like, okay, this person's making sure. And when things go wrong, they're like, oh, I'm sorry that he did that. You know, could be cultural, but I think that we all kind of have that in us.
Well, last thing I want to ask you before we wrap up. So you're a Shopify dev, you know, you've got a great Shopify development firm we'll talk about here in just a second. What's the news on the Shopify front? You know, we're recording this in July of 2024. Any big news in terms of feature sets that have come out, changes at the company, functionality? Yeah, what's the word on the street for Shopify owners?
I just came back from Toronto where they had a developer conference for the first time, I think, in 6 years. And it was really cool because the CEO Harley and the founder Toby were just walking around the conference, nerding out. The founder Toby really is like, he is a straight and straight engineer. He went off on a rant on engineering for like, you know, 15 minutes. I was like, oh, this guy's he's the real deal. and what I found, you know, one of the biggest things that I'm excited about, and now kind of dealing with in our company, we're working with more global merchants, is Shopify Markets is creating, it's making it a lot easier to sell overseas. It's making it a lot easier to create, like to collect taxes and duties overseas. It's also making it easier so that you can manage multiple stores that are not only direct to consumer, but wholesale within one dashboard, as opposed to what it has now, where it's like, you have to have multiple stores and you have to have multiple domains and manage multiple, like becomes a huge technical debt for anyone that has to manage an international store. So that's really exciting because a lot of our merchants struggle with that. It's like they have 5 sites that they got to maintain with different, you know, with just different themes and different integrations. So I'm really excited about that. They're working a lot on the international and the wholesale side of simplifying that. And then another thing that's really exciting is the POS system, they're opening up a lot of like the endpoints and the APIs for developers to improve on it, because that's one of the things that a lot of people that complain about Shopify is the POS. And as the companies get more global and bigger, the POS is the part that they're focusing on. So, I mean, there's just, is there anything in specific that you have with Shopify that maybe I could I can answer? It'd be like, oh, I actually know there's a fix coming for that. Is there anything that you struggled with?
No, that's exactly kind of just feature rollouts. I know that multi-country has always been kind of a pain point for people. So it's cool. Is that something that they've actually rolled out in full, or it's something that is coming in the coming months or years?
It's coming in the next couple months. I can link you to the video of how it looks. It's special. It's going to be really good. I've worked in Magento. I've worked with, you know, I've worked with big commerce. I think that this is going to be, you know, they're trying to take market share because it looks really good.
Yeah. We'd love to. We'll link up to that. I'll get that video from you after we wrap up and we'll link up to it in the show notes. Talk a little bit about Solo Media Group and what you do, who you work with. You have an interesting kind of structure and format too, not your kind of standard payment for Shopify work, which I think is interesting. So yeah, give us the details on all that.
Yeah. I mean, when I started the company, I was a freelancer on Upwork. So working on Upwork, you get to see the worst possible clients ever. You know, there's some good people, but what we ended up landing on is there's a lot of agencies that take on projects that they can't fulfill, and then they'll hire somebody for cheap labor or, you know, whatever, and they'll mess it up, and then they want to hire somebody to fix them. So what we found ourselves doing is fixing a lot of messed up agency projects. And what we did for the beginning of our company was, you know, white label. So we were fixing a lot of these agencies' problems, and a lot of them were focused on e-commerce. And what we noticed is that most agencies kind of do a terrible job. And then the opposite, like on the other end, freelancers, when they get too good, they kind of, they ghost you, or you get too busy. You know, they're focused on where the money's at that moment. So the whole model that we try to build around was, you know, we want to give the customer direct access to a technical person so that they don't have that agency feeling of like bureaucracy. Oh, let me go talk to the dev and let me do this. Like, no, you're speaking to a technical person that can solve your problems on the spot, and you're getting the reliability of an agency because every client has a team of developers that it works on their project, right? So that's the whole model was built off white labeling. We were like, we don't want to do that. We want to make sure that the clients have, it's easy to see how much it's going to cost. It's easy to have access to a technical person, and we want to be reliable for them because it's hard to find reliable people in this business. I think that I probably could have scaled faster or bigger if I would have done what the other agencies do, but then I wouldn't be able to sleep at night. So.
Yeah, you probably also wouldn't have a business in 3 or 4 years too, or if not shorter. So you're building a good foundation. So solomediagroup.co. Do you have anyone listening, like who's your ideal client? Like if you maybe give a quick shout out for the types of services that you offer on Shopify, and then kind of who is the best fit in terms of maybe a revenue size store?
Yeah, anyone that's doing over $1 million in revenue, over $1 million to $20 million is sort of like a good fit for us. Because they're in that sweet spot where they're trying to, you know, they don't want to spend too much, but they also need this technical help, and they're trying to look for the best way to do things within Shopify. I think that what a lot of people get wrong in the Shopify world is they might hire somebody that's not specialized in Shopify, and then you end up creating messes for yourself later. As an example, we might say, hey, like, you don't need to do this custom. Why don't you use this app? We have 10 other customers that use this app and it works just as well. You know, it'll cost you, you know, $10 a month as opposed to having to do this whole mess of customization. So like, I think that someone that revenue would be a good fit. And people that have generally like complex catalogs, like a lot of SKUs, or there's an ERP that you work with that's a little bit complicated that how do we make sure this integration is correct? Like anything that there's a little bit of complexity in the back is a good fit for us. If it's something really straightforward, like, you know, we sell pet supplements and there's no customizations, it's just a subscription, that's probably not the best fit. It's usually somebody that has a little bit of complexity on the back end.
Great. Well, it sounds like you, solomediagroup.co, make sure to check them out. And I was going to ask you, the developer conference you mentioned, is that what used to be Unite? Because I know Shopify did Unite, and I went to a couple of Unites, which were super fun conferences. They were a blast. Actually, excuse me, I only went to one Unite and wished I'd gone to some of the others. But is that, did they stop doing that and then they finally brought it back?
They're trying to do Unite again. They're trying to do Unite again, but this was like a developer focus. What was so cool about this conference, and I don't want to nerd out about it too much, is that you got to meet the tech teams that were working in the products of Shopify.
So that's cool.
If you're like, you know, like because we work in Shopify, we know that they're fixing the Shopify extensions. And I got to talk to the guys and I was like, well, what are you guys working on? Like, why are you working on that problem? And they're explaining what they're seeing in the ecosystem. And then I'm like, well, have you thought about this problem? Like, it was like a brainstorm with each of the different products that they're developing. And it's different than Unite. And I think that's probably why, because it's focused towards like the building of it. It was pretty cool.
That's awesome. Well, Jonathan, so glad you were able to come on. So glad that Alan, big thank you to Alan Walton for connecting us. And yeah, congrats on what you've built at the agency, what you've accomplished, like, you know, with the big brand launch and everything you learned there. So just super fun geeking out with you about all this. So looking forward to staying in touch, and thank you so much for coming on and doing this. And again, solomediagroup.co is the link to his agency, if that's something that sounds interesting or it'd be a good fit for you. And then also we'll link up to that. The YouTube video about all the Shopify stuff coming down the pipe, as well as there was one other thing, the tool that you use to manage the pixel installations and monitoring. I think you mentioned, what was the name of that company again?
We use Little Data.
Little Data. That's right. Okay.
Yeah. I think it's a pretty affordable price, and that it's a small enough company where it's cool. Yeah. It's a cool company.
Amazing. Jonathan, thanks so much, man. This was fun.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
That's going to do it for this week. A big thank you to OneClick Upsell, who offers incredible upsell software to get more from every single customer and increase your average order value on your site. To make more money from the customers you already have, check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And if you own a 7 or 8 figure store, you really should be a part of our private community and forums here at Ecommerce Fuel, where you can connect with over 1,200 store owners just like you. We're so confident it'll be a game changer that we offer a 10x ROI guarantee. If you don't see 10x your membership value in the first year, we'll refund you 100% of your membership fees plus toss in an extra $1,000 for the hassle. So you can learn more and apply at ecommercefuel.com. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and look forward to seeing you again next Friday.